Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Joe Riegel. He's the founder of Zola Books, a new, and as we are speaking, in August of 2012, soon to be released, new bookselling platform. Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks. And let me clarify one thing quick. I'm a co-founder with Michael Strong. I'm more the book guy, and he's more the tech guy. He comes from Sotheby's, and I come from the magical world of book publishing.
And how long have you been working with Michael on this?
As an agent at Riegel Literary, I hired him about 4 or 5 years ago to be our director of online marketing. He was at Sotheby's and wanted to do something he felt was more meaningful. And the thing he said was, I'm tired of finding nice stuff for rich people. And my joke in return was, publishing is the place for you. And it was really great. There were no markers or milestones the first year because we really had no idea what should be happening. We just knew that publishing was about to transform and we wanted to be, you know, in the forefront of that. And the way it ended up working out is that the forefront meant that we both ended up leaving Riegel Literary and starting a completely separate and new company, which is Zola Books.
So what was the inspiration for Zola? I mean, maybe before we go there, you should describe Zola exactly for people who are listening.
Zola is the first open and direct social platform for book selling, which means we're selling ebooks. We are a retailer. But the things that you can do around those books are totally different from the things you can do through other booksellers. For one, we're not tied to a device. So unlike, you know, Amazon, which wants you on the Kindle, or Barnes & Noble, which wants you on the Nook, we don't care what device you read on. We'll be able to work on all web-enabled devices, whether it's the Kindle, whether it's the Nook, or the new Google Nexus, or the iPad and iPhone. So that is a very big difference for a reader, because currently if you buy books in the Kindle ecosystem and you like the new Nook, you know, glow light, if you move, you lose all your books. And with Zola, you keep your books. You can upload them to different devices. As long as you have a Zola account, those books are always there for you. So that's one really big difference. And then the social aspects are built on the idea that in the real world, we've already solved the book problem. You've got friends who make recommendations. You read the New York Times Book Review, or maybe you read O Magazine, or you're part of the Romance Writers of America, or you have all of these people who are tastemakers and guides to the books that you like. No website has yet put them all in one place so that you could follow them and have them lead you right to where you want to be, and then buy the book without having to go somewhere else. So in that way, we're not doing some sort of revolutionary, you know, new algorithm that's going to make books read themselves. All we've done is say, in the real world, people know how to find books. They have shopping experiences. They have people they rely on and trust. We're creating a platform for those people, those book advocates, to broadcast online, and you can follow them. And if you see something you like, you buy the book. It's right there. It's easy to do.
So when you say it'll run on devices, it also, I mean, you're saying it'll run on anything that runs on the web, so that means my computer, my laptop, my iPad, whatever I have.
Yes, and even e-ink devices like the web-enabled Kindle 3, Kindle
right.
Touch.
And will you also have an app then for those people who happen to like apps?
Sure. The HTML5 reader, which is a web language, rides on top of all the devices, which is how we don't have to ask permission to help you read a book on the Kindle. Amazon is not going to take our app, so we had to have that web reader. And since the web now can cache 100 megs, it means you can read, depending on the size of the book file, could be 100 books. And then you could always upload new ones and the oldest ones fall off. And you're going to have some meaningful number of books on your device, even if you're offline. But it's even better to have every single book ever that you bought in the app, and in the iPad, iPhone, and in the Google Nexus, you can have that app and read all of those books.
Got it. So actually, what you touched on there, I think, is important, probably for anybody thinking about this, not realizing that what you're saying is, because you said earlier, you can sell me an ebook, but basically, you've had to create your own reader for me to read that in, because
yes.
Otherwise you're not able to talk to people who are, say, trapped in a Kindle ecosystem or who are using a Nook ecosystem. So essentially what you're saying is or what you've done is created a proprietary book reader.
Yeah, I mean, I think every internet company starts out imagining itself to be a thing, and then it turns into some other thing. And for us, Zola Books did not change. We always knew we would be selling ebooks. We always knew we would be sort of remediating, you know, bringing the curators into the light, giving them voice. What we didn't realize was the reader was going to be necessary. It was actually something that when we figured out, in order to sell books to all platforms, we're going to have to spend more money to build this thing. We are all irritated trying to figure out, how do we not do this? And it's embarrassing now because I look back and there was about 2 weeks where we were trying to figure out, you know, workarounds. And it belatedly hit me that actually this is the most amazing opportunity ever, because the reader is how people come to us. I mean, you don't spend 10 hours on a website usually. You spend 10 hours reading a book. So if the book is an expression of that website, which means the reader functionality, the reader, capital R, is an expression of the website, that's how people are on our website all the time, whether they have to consciously think I'm going back to Zola, or they're just there doing the stuff they do, sending messages to their friends, seeing what their friends are reading, getting recommendations, even buying books from within the book they are currently reading.
Right. So that's actually very powerful. So what you're saying is the book, the reader, is essentially the Zola experience. Now, the core experience.
We have all these different things, so I can't, especially because we're going live in September around the time people are hearing this. I don't want to predict what the Zola experience is. People might really dig being on the site and seeing the social of following, you know, a big magazine or following a friend or following a writer and seeing that writer's blog posts or whatever all in one place. They might like that greater degree of sort of rendering of this social stuff going on. But when you think about where you're spending time, it takes a lot longer to read a book than to see what's going on Facebook.
Right. Well, just thinking in terms of the way internet people think, well, if I can get you to spend more than 5 minutes on my site, I've done a really good thing. So yeah. What you're saying, you know, and Facebook gets people to spend hours per day on it, which is one of the values that they have. It's a key to their value proposition. So what you're saying is, if you're saying this, that if I'm reading a book on Zola, essentially you've done what so many websites have been desperate to do for years, and that's to get me to be in your environment.
That's totally true, yeah. If we have a book that no one else has, like The Time Traveler's Wife, and you want to buy that book, and you come to Zola and you buy it, and you're reading it on whatever device you like, Kindle or Nook or whatever, maybe it takes you 5 hours, 8 hours, even 3 hours, however long it takes you to read that book, that is essentially the Zola website.
Right.
So that's, you're totally right.
And so, but we're not in the cloud. I want to make sure that I'm clear in understanding that. In other words, if I'm not connected to the web, I'm still able to read my book.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a Dropbox or something. Like, the books are in the cloud, but
right.
When you're on whatever device, you upload books to that device. When you buy it, it's automatically uploaded so that, you know, we assume that's the book you're most interested in, the book that you bought 3 months ago. You know, if we've maxed out on your 100 books that you bought from Zola and you haven't read something in 3 months, that's probably the one that'll get pushed off by the new book. So they're on the device, but of course they're all in the cloud, which is how you can switch devices and still have access.
Right. But for local reading, this is very important to
yeah.
people. They don't want to be, you know, figuring, oh, I'm on the train and I lose connectivity. Now I can't read my book anymore.
Yeah, the example we thought about was somebody comes to Zola and they buy a few books and they get on a plane. And there's, you know, when you buy a book from us, there's a read now and read later. And initially, read now meant, you know, it opens right then. And read later meant you bought it and you'd have the ability to upload it later. And somebody said, well, okay, so you get on the plane and you go to read later and you're not online and you're really mad at Zola. It's like, oh, okay, so read now or read later actually automatically uploads the book. So it's there on that device. It just doesn't open it.
Right. So now it really does mean read later.
Yes, exactly. So you get on the plane and it's there and that's what you would expect. That would be
right.
Rational.
So the model here, so you've created you have the reader, you've got the all these ebooks which you have to get from publishers.
Mm-hmm.
You're going direct to publishers to get ebooks,
yes. Yeah.
Not through distributors.
Yes, I mean some publishers work through distributors. So if you're a small house, say your Melville House, which does some wonderful books, they are distributed by Random House. So yep. They're you know, but right. Basically we're going to the source.
Right. And so so that's the supply side.
Right.
You're working with publishers. You'll be, I suppose, then will you work with Smashwords, people who are aggregators of self-publishing authors?
That's a question that we don't fully have a defined position on. As an agent, I know that not every good book gets published, and that was infuriating because obviously I represented some of those books. And one of the great opportunities for writers right now is you can get published, and you could go directly to, you know, Kindle Direct Publishing, or you could go to a Smashwords, an intermediary who will put your books on all platforms. But, you know, the problem for us is if Smashwords has, you know, 185,000 books or something like that, that's a lot of books to ingest, and many of those books are selling, you know, 3 copies. I think we will probably find some middle ground where, you know, Smashwords just did a deal with the Contra Costa Library System in California for their top 10,000 selling titles. So we might do something like that just mm-hmm. because we're a small company and scaling up is the challenge we'll face over the next few years, and let's not bury ourselves under the mountain before we start right. walking up it.
So when you launch, you're going to have books from how many books will you have and from how many publishers roughly?
Around 350 to 400,000 books.
That's a lot of books.
From, you know, the major, you know, 25 and beyond publishers. The Big Six, obviously, is where we started because, you know, I also work with those people or had worked with those people as a literary agent. Talked to, you know, Grove Atlantic and Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and Workman and Harlequin and, you know, all the other publishers who either will be dealing with directly or are distributed through some of the Big Six.
So you've generally had good responses from the publishers?
Some publishers have asked about investing.
That's good. And I think you were planning on launching in June of 2012 and then ran into this kind of thorny difficulty unexpectedly, I think,
yes.
that the Department of Justice had filed suit against a number of the big all 6 of the big publishers.
Five of the big six
publishers. Accusing them of price fixing and collusion. However, none of that is anything I want to talk about here other than how it affected you. But at the point where you were about to launch, you discovered that you weren't able to do business with some of these publishers.
Yeah, we were in process or had contracts with a bunch of the publishers already in April when the suit was filed. And I never imagined the DOJ would file suit because, you know, I had had direct conversations with people like John Sargent, who's the CEO of Macmillan, in which I said, why don't all the publishers get together and start their own retailing platform? And he said, well, have you heard of antitrust? Which makes me think that he was very aware of the dangers of collusion. And so I assumed they had not colluded and that this lawsuit never happened. Then it did happen, and we were surprised, just because my insider information was that they didn't collude, so therefore it wasn't going to happen. Even publishers who were sued who did not settle tore up their contracts, and we found ourselves in the unhappy position of having been working on a company that was going to launch and preparing to sort of blow people's minds in June at Book Expo, which is the annual industry trade fair. And, you know, the phrase was spring like Athena, fully formed from Zeus's forehead. And suddenly that wasn't going to happen. And that's not, you know, I mean, every business has its challenges, and that's not a challenge we had anticipated or were excited by, but it did eventually turn into opportunity, which is we raised more money, and that was wonderful, and we found out we made more friends. So there's opportunity there, but it's the ecosystem that Zola represents is incredibly rich and layered. It's not the typical tech startup that's a little slice of, you know, some element of publishing. You know, as one person in the industry said, the thing that's exciting is the ambition of this project. This is not an algorithm to help me find my next book. You know, this is not just a reader. This is everything. And everything sounds insanely ambitious, you know, when you've got nothing, because people say, why don't you just start with a little algorithm that helps you find your next book or whatever. But to me, the only way to change the way things worked, basically, to help readers find a better way of encountering books, of doing the things they did in the real world, of reading with their friends, reading with their book club, you know, students and teachers, et cetera, et cetera. The only way to do it was to do everything. And that was the reader being open. That was the curation, which is having all of these empowered tastemakers lead you to books. It was the social, where you can recommend books to your friends, or you can highlight passages. You can leave Easter eggs for your friends. So if you're following a friend and you turn a page and there's a surprise that that person said, this totally reminds me of you, or whatever it is. We kind of had to do it all. And that is insanely ambitious. But we are, you know, as we speak, about to go live with that all.
Well, no, I agree that it's ambitious. I think it actually does sound like a kind of necessary collection of elements that you need to have in order to offer a really powerful experience. Otherwise, you know, there are other people doing all those things in
right.
some fragmented way. So in terms of the delivery side to readers,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think the other thing that happened around the time that you were building this was the cancellation of the Google eBooks relationship with the American Booksellers Association and all of its member stores, which I believe is, I can't remember the date that it ends officially, I think it's
January 1st,
2013. Yeah. All of those stores will have had to come up with a different solution for selling eBooks.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume, and you know, if there are things that you can't talk about because they're proprietary, you can tell me, but I presume you went immediately to ABA the day you heard that Google was canceling their deal to offer yourself as the solution for them.
The good part is that we actually had built it in anticipation of that happening, not because in that case I knew anything about the, you know, what might happen. Just simply as a reader, I tried to buy in conjunction with my local bookseller through Google eBooks, and it was frustrating, and I gave up. And this is before Zola was fully formed. We were working on it, but it just in that moment it was like, this sucked. I really did not enjoy this experience. I didn't end up buying the book. You know, I could have bought it without the bookseller, but that made me feel guilty. It was like, well, that's a lose-lose. I don't have the book, and the bookseller didn't get paid. So, you know, at that moment, it was like, we could do better than this. And there are various technical reasons we can do better. The way we have built Zola makes it easier for people to buy books. I mean, it makes it as easy as touching the price and then confirming that you actually want to buy that. Since if with a touchscreen, you don't want people accidentally buying books and getting mad that they, you know, it was in my pocket. So we had planned for it really early on, including the dealing with what's called Nexus, which is sales affiliates, you know, having physical locations that should render taxes. And there was a debate because Amazon has ducked paying taxes. They don't seem to like the idea that their purchases should be taxed, and so it's been a pitched battle they've been fighting. And both philosophically to accept the idea that we're the most local version of an e-tailing company you could ever imagine, a practical fashion, which is it's easier to build it right the first time. You know, just trying to make the right choice as a company in general, trying to make ethical choices, it seemed like we needed to embrace the reality that sales tax is going to be implemented sooner or later, and let's do the right thing now. And that was great, because when we heard that the deal with Google and the ABA was going to come apart, we were already ready, and I had stuff to show. And we went to them and solicited their interest, and I'm sure dozens of other companies did the same. And it's been an attenuated process that, you know, we've had to prove ourselves in various different ways. But I think we have been succeeding in proving ourselves, and with luck, there are going to be several hundred bookstores, you know, affiliated with Zola, or what we're calling really partnered with Zola, and these bookstores will have their own storefronts on Zola around the time that people are listening to this.
Right, which is a very different way of thinking about selling ebooks. The Google method, or the way that it was implemented, was a bookstore has a website, and then there's this little, you know, ebook box,
right,
which is sort of buried on the site somewhere, maybe not even that available, but also, I think, most people would agree, pretty poorly implemented. So what you've done, the way you'll do this is that, in fact, you're providing all those bookstores with a book-selling environment.
Mm-hmm.
And each store will have its, or a bookstore could have its own presence on the Zola website, correct?
Yeah, we're actually doing both, just because there are booksellers who want to drive sales from their own websites. A lot of the booksellers realize that the best possible world is, a site where everyone is. And it's not just, your customers who you have to drive to your site. It's because they would be facing the same problem that we were initially imagining before we had realized that the reader was our icebreaker. So instead of, having these, sorry, I'm just thinking, this is good that it's going to be edited. Clearing my throat. So instead of focusing on, that functionality, we're giving it to the people who want it, but the idea is let's get everybody in the same ecosystem, and then we can help everyone find equilibrium. And the way to do that for booksellers is to create a page that's their page. They have control of that page. They can sort of brand that page. People follow them, and people can also sign up as what we're saying, people can pledge allegiance, which is a sort of lock-in. So for a bookseller, the reason we're calling it a partnership is, yes, you've got a widget on your site, and if that's what you really want to focus people on, they can click on that link and buy books, and you get
without
paid.
Leaving their...
Right, without leaving their ecosystem.
Right.
Great.
Some of them want... I mean, some stores are
sure.
going to feel strongly about that.
So we're going to do that. But you could also put a widget that sends them to your own storefront on Zola. So if you're, Politics and Prose in D.C., you could, click on either the Politics and Prose page that has the widget to link to Zola, or you could just simply tell people, just go to the Politics and Prose page on Zola. You arrive, it's Politics and Prose's storefront. It lists all their events. It has their staff picks, all the stuff that bookstores do that add value to a reader.
But, they could also do both. I mean, in other words, if I'm a store, let's say Politics and Prose, I could have a presence on Zola, that page you just described.
Right.
I could also have on my own website simply the Zola book buying widget.
Right.
So that someone who is already my customer stays on my site.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm also present on the, let's call it the Zola shopping center, the shopping mall.
Right.
If you attract people to the mall, then I'm here along with however many other booksellers there are, and I can reap the rewards thereof.
Right.
Without losing my own customers necessarily. If they want to do it that way, they can.
Well, those are two options. There's a third option, which is the Pledge Allegiance, which is somebody checks a box either when they create a profile or even they just see the bookseller page for the first time. There's a box to check. That's essentially a flag in our database that says no matter where you come from or what you do, whether you go to the storefront, whether you come from their site, whether you've completely forgotten about that bookstore.
You're going to land there the next time you go.
Not that you're going to land there. You could land anywhere, but the bookstore gets paid.
Oh, I see. That's very interesting.
To make it easier for
right.
a reader because...
I'm that customer. In other words, that way Politics and Prose
always
says,
gets paid.
My customer is always my customer.
Right.
Even if they're shopping in another store and they see something they like, they're going to buy it from me.
Right.
That's interesting. No, that actually is pretty innovative, I think.
So I think if you were shopping through Google eBooks, you were not doing it because of the experience. You're doing it because you really want to support your local indie. And our thought was, let's make it the easiest, most intuitive, frictionless experience possible for the reader, because you aren't going to succeed if you don't. But if we do that, we also have to protect the booksellers who said, oh, you're going to be like Google, you're just going to steal our customers. It's like, no, we're actually going to put this permanent flag. I mean, obviously, if the reader moves away and finds another bookstore or their favorite manager's fired or whatever, they can uncheck it themselves. But we can't do anything about it.
Right.
It is permanently
right,
checked.
It's up to the customer.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
which...
if you really love Politics and Prose and you want them to get paid, you don't have to worry about, I forgot to land on their storefront. They always get paid. You check that box, they get
right.
paid. So that to me is a partnership. That is a walking the walk.
So does the same thing operate? You had mentioned earlier curators.
Yeah.
And the curator, as I understand it, let's say it could be me,
mm-hmm.
as a website, a blogger, a book blogger. I'm a curator. So I'm going to have a page on your website, a storefront essentially, where I can talk about books. And if people want to buy those books from me, they can, or maybe not. I mean, they could buy them from Politics and Prose, but they've learned about them from me. But similarly, I can have a widget for Zola on my site
right.
and sell books through Zola from my own website.
Mm-hmm.
So, these curators,
yeah.
They're essentially non-bookstores, but who have some other connection to the book
you could call
universe.
Them advocates, tastemakers, guides. Curators is not an ideal world. It sounds hoity-toity.
Well, when you're talking to the people who are themselves curators, it's fine. Yes. Probably when you're talking to readers.
Readers are like, what
this is not a museum.
Exactly.
I'm not talking to a curator. I want to talk to a bookseller, or I want to talk to my friends, or I want to talk to a record. I mean, there is no good terminology for this, probably, for readers.
Not that I know of. I mean, we debated a bunch of different terms. Curator describes the function, which is, here's a list of things that I'm advocating. And advocate is too general. So it's like, okay, we'll go with curator. But the idea is just that there are people whose taste you trust. And obviously people whose taste you don't. And you follow the people who lead you to what you love.
You're going to have writers also potentially acting as curators. In other words, you're going to allow writers to have presences, their own pages.
Absolutely.
So, you know, thinking in terms of brands, the way, you know, we do, the author is, you know, for many people, the author is really the key brand.
Yeah.
It's the differentiator between how you decide what to read.
Stephen King is bigger than Simon & Schuster.
Yeah.
You know, it's Stephen King is the brand. If he moved to some other publishing house, it would make no difference to the millions of people who read Stephen King.
But let's say, putting aside Stephen King, because he's sort of super brand,
yeah.
Let's say, you know, pick another writer who has published, say, 8 or 10 books and has a pretty good audience. This writer might have her own page.
Mm-hmm.
And her own books would be listed on the site,
yep.
or on the page.
Yeah.
And she might talk about books, and she might talk about her own books, but she might also recommend other people. You know, this is something I think actually that people are interested in. Let's say I like Jane Smiley. I might want to know what books Jane Smiley is reading and recommending.
Mm-hmm.
So she can do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously working with writers for 20 years, I know that they genuinely love being readers, too. And the idea is a book conversation, and it's only books. I think that is a distinguishing factor. This is people who love books talking about books. So, you know, one of my writers, Audrey Niffenegger, loved The Night Circus. And before it was even published, somebody asked her in a radio interview, you know, what do you recommend? She said, well, this won't be out for 3 months, which is always the danger of being, you know, kind of in the business because I read all these books that are sent for blurbs. I really love this book, Night Circus, and I think everybody should go out and buy it when it's published. Which is pretty awesome, you know. I mean, that's, I'm sure for Aaron Morgenstern, the author, that was kind of amazing to hear. Audrey just said it because she loves books. She loves being a reader. And most writers started as readers. I mean, some of them you wonder, but, you know, most writers started as readers. So to give them, again, voice in their advocacy, they may not be, they might not run a blog like Book Slut. But if Neil Gaiman says, God, I just read this book that I really love, there are going to be a lot of people who are like, oh, Neil loves this book. I better go out and buy that. So to give him the ability to advocate is what the site is all about, books only and book conversation.
And you could imagine somebody, let's say, again, a creative book person might say, gee, maybe if I got 100 writers to tell me what's their favorite book, I could make a list of the 100 favorite books of the 100 favorite writers or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and put it up as a page.
Doing that now, yeah. One of the good strokes of luck is that through a friend of Mike Strong's, my co-founder, we met a guy named Bill Shapiro, who was the founder and editorial director of Life and Life.com, or the relaunch of Life and then Lovelife.com. And Life.com was the number one app in 33 countries, and last year had 1 billion page views. So we thought he might know something about content. And we approached him in a sort of open conversation, showed him the site as it was. This is probably back in April or May. And he really loved the site and then said, what about the homepage? You're not showing me the homepage. And we said, well, that's because we haven't really solved the homepage problem. Showed it to him. He agreed that we had not solved the homepage problem and said, I would love to solve this problem for you. So it was just, you know, fantastic to have somebody with his depth and breadth of experience come on and turn that into what it needed to be, which is we're so focused on, you know, books and people who create books and authors and curators, we'd kind of forgotten books do relate to the outside world. You know, there are events that are happening and there are books about those events. And, you know, with him coming more from magazine and news background, he saw the opportunity to really create Zola as the one-stop shop for anybody who cares about books at all. And all of the news that you want to know about what's going on in the book world, if there is an event or if a big movie based on a book is happening, or if there was something going on in the world that there is a book that talked right about that, this happened to be unfolding right now, the current events aspect of it. But also the fact that we have all of this content from these authors who have voice, again, in our ecosystem, and they want to advocate. So there are lots of writers who are delighted to be approached to say, here are my five favorite books about this thing or about that thing, or the book that I read again and again every year. And, you know, readers want to know what their favorite writers are reading. So just as every writer is a reader and wants to talk about the books they love, every reader wants to hear from their favorite writers more than anyone else. What do you recommend? And that's the beauty of this ecosystem, where we're giving all of these, you know, quote unquote, intermediaries a voice.
So does that mean, what does that mean is going to be on the homepage then?
It's going to be all kinds of stuff that we think might be interesting. And then as you start to do things on the site, buy books and rate books, the recommendation engine is going to start to sort of curate for you and help lead people you might be interested to you, so you can say yay or nay. We haven't talked about it, but what we're actually calling a curation engine is both human and algorithmic. So that we do have an algorithm, several. It is the engine of the site, in that it is going to be seeing what you're doing and then helping you find, you know, make the connection. If you are buying a bunch of romance, or if you're rating, you know, romance novels very highly, and you're not buying nonfiction, all of a sudden you're going to start seeing more stuff that's in your area of interest. We might suggest you follow the Romance Writers of America, or we might suggest you buy a particular book by Debbie Maycomber, or we might suggest you follow, you know, Nora Roberts. And there's all these different ways that we're going to build an ecosystem around you without you having to, you know, spend hours and hours trying to hack through the jungle of stuff that's out there.
So, unlike, let me ask the question. Amazon and Barnes & Noble do that as well, but they charge publishers sometimes for some of those, shall we say, recommendations. In other words, it's not pure organic recommendation engine. It's an influenced recommendation circumstance and market. It's a marketing environment.
It's called co-op, yeah, right. Cooperative
and,
marketing.
Right. Barnes & Noble has done it since the beginning of time, you know, that the book, and retailers all over America do it. I'm not attacking it, but I'm just observing that and many consumers don't actually think that they are being marketed to,
right,
in an active way. So the question then is, you know, are you going to, is your recommendation going to be influenceable by publishers paying you for that right?
No. Short answer. We had to figure out so many different aspects of this big ambitious company. And in the end, we thought, let's make money from selling books. And let's not make money from asking publishers to market on our site. Let's not take advertising or publicity on our site. Let's not do anything other than make money from selling a book. And that keeps it clean. It makes it easier for readers to trust us. It's better for the curation engine, because it's not going to, you know, if you buy Jonathan Franzen and somebody paid to have James Patterson recommended, we don't want to be recommending James Patterson, because if you bought Jonathan Franzen, you're probably not interested in James Patterson, and vice versa. So that's one of the great opportunities that not taking money for that gives us. The other aspect that is different from us or Barnes & Noble and Amazon is that, you know, you're talking about a book-to-book recommendation. So if you buy... If you buy the latest Laura Hillenbrand, it's, you know, some of them are paid and some are not, but there are going to be other books suggested. Our system is going to be totally different. We're going to suggest other books, of course, because you're going to want to buy other books. But we're also going to suggest that you follow Laura Hillenbrand, who probably, haven't checked, has a social presence. You know, maybe she tweets or has a blog or something like that. Or maybe she just likes advocating for other writers on her page on Zola. So there's this human element that is kind of missing from even the really good algorithms of other websites. You know, aside from not taking money, which keeps us clean, the idea that we're bringing you tastemakers as opposed to just product to buy is going to feel really different. You know, the site looks different and it feels different, because it's much more about people and community and making that connection.
And you had mentioned earlier that you might have magazines on the site. Magazines will be essentially kind of members of the community. And in a lot of ways, magazines have always had that connection with books, whether it's been a book review section or whether it's just been stories that are related to... Either the stories sometimes become books. Sometimes the stories are related to books. So you're going to enable all kinds of connectives for magazines. But do you think that it might, again, I sort of get to this thinking where the once you build this, of course, you don't know what's going to happen, but it seems like when you create an ecosystem, you foster creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you imagine people coming to the, maybe they come to you, I don't know whether they have to ask you to do this or not, but let's say I looked at this and said, wow, this would allow me to create my own magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a new thing. It's not like Newsweek or Life or all those other existing magazines. I want to create my own magazine, my own book review magazine, right on Zola, because I love books and I want to write about books. And if people want to read my reviews, great. You know, I'm a magazine now.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that might happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think all the things that people love to do around books are possible. Our goal was to build the perfect platform and give everyone the tools, and all the houses are going to look different. You know, some people aren't going to be very interested in decorating. It's going to be a white house, and here's my book. But other people are going to be like, this is fantastic. I get to use 8 different colors, and I'm going to build a turret, and we're going to have, you know, curtains that are horizontal and whatever cool stuff they want to do. That's the ecosystem we're creating.
And just one more question about that. Let's say, again, this is not so hypothetical, but let's say you had mentioned Book Slut.
Okay.
So let's say you're a book blogger and you have a blog already.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put your blog on? How do people know what's on the content? In other words, am I going to build an RSS feed that's going to put all of my content on your pages, or do I have to manually build something?
No, we've built it so that you don't have to. I mean, it makes it 10 times easier for the people who provide the quote-unquote content. It's also a recognition of reality, which is any new site that doesn't have a lot of people using it so far is going to have a hard time saying, hey, spend 5 hours making your page great. It's you're doing stuff. You know, you'll have a blog, you'll have your Twitter account, you'll be doing events, and our build was basically centered on the idea of if we create the tools to link these things, then at least at start, before anyone knows whether this platform is engaging and compelling, they can at least make their page come alive and watch. And it takes literally about 5 minutes and 10 minutes if you're not technologically inclined like me.
And so and then, it was just, I guess I got to do one more follow-up, even though I said I'd only ask one more question. if I'm one of those people who has a page, then do I get, is there going to be statistics? So I'll know how many people are visiting me?
One of the foundational philosophies of Zola is open, and open is expressed in a lot of different ways. One is, as I said, you can read our books on every device. We're not trying to lock you into some you know, walled garden. It's also open in the sense that we're going to share all the information. Not to every reader. You're not going to be able to log on and see what this author sold and how much they, you know, made or something like that. But if you're the person whose book that is, or if you're the publisher, or if you're the curator, the blogger, if it's your page, you should know what's going on. It's good for you to have that information. You'll make better choices. If you're a publisher, you'll know how to market your books better. And that's one of their big problems. They don't necessarily know who's buying their books. They might know geographically, where did that book sell? They don't know who bought it. And they don't know if that person liked it or didn't like it. And in our ecosystem, completely transparent, completely open. So you'll see not only what books you advocated for that people bought and how much money that generated for you, but you'll also see what they viewed and what they wishlisted, which gives you more information as well to make choices of like, wow, apparently everybody is viewing this one book I advocated for. Nobody's buying it.
Right.
That tells you something. It doesn't, you know, you have to figure out what that thing is that it tells you, but it's information that now enables you to make better decisions about what you're doing professionally. So, again, we're building the tools so that the people who have an interest in helping readers find books can do it more easily.
Well, I think what I'm going to do is figure that we'll come back and do another interview in 6 months and do a kind of check-in, I think, because I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens and how it evolves. But I think what you've built is really promising, and I wish you a lot of luck with it.
Well, thank you very much. I hope by then we haven't turned into a site that sells glitter and goldfish.
I trust that will not happen.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing this. This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks. I've been talking to Joe Riegel from Zola Books. It's now less than a month away from when he'll launch, but when you're listening to this, it's very likely it will have launched. So let us know what you think of it.
Thanks.